I'm Hal Eisner. Welcome to What the Hal? And we're reflecting back on 1968, because 1968, according to some, was arguably one of the most significant years in American history. It's the year that Martin Luther King was assassinated. It was the year that Bobby Kennedy was assassinated as he was trying to make a run for president. He was killed here in Los Angeles at the Ambassador Hotel. I talked to his son, and I also talked to Dolores Huerta, who was there. She was a co-founder of the American Farm Workers Union with Cesar Chavez, who was her brother-in-law, and Tim Harrell, who was a longtime journalist, worked with me at Fox 11, but also was at a radio station, KLAC and KMET, back in 1968. An interesting story. He went to get a bite to eat in the kitchen when Bobby Kennedy walked in and was killed by Sirhan Sirhan in that same kitchen. Here's the conversation. Dolores Huerta is a activist, a longtime activist, was involved with Cesar Chavez in the founding of the United Farm Workers Union, has been in many a protest in her life. How many do you think?
Oh, I can't count them. There's too many.
Probably so. And I can't count the number I've been at, covering people like you, doing the things that you do very successfully. And also, you were involved with the Kennedy campaign back in 1968, 50 years ago, and actually stood at the podium with Senator Kennedy just moments before he was assassinated, which is a memory that just never does go away. Tim Harrell also in the studio with us right now. And Tim is a former producer here at Fox 11. A journalist that goes way back. He's when the Kennedy assassination happened, he was with KLAC, KMET Radio, which was a Metro Media company.
Yeah,
and you were in the kitchen when the senator was assassinated, and that's just to set the stage for everybody. You were at the podium, you were in the kitchen. Now, I don't mean this to be funny, but it is a little funny when you think about the circumstance, because Tim was hungry and Tim went to the kitchen to get something to eat at the hotel. That's when the senator came back, and that's when all hell broke loose. What happened?
Well, I had figured that everything was over. The senator had made his acceptance speech, and the Democrats, no offense, were not known for feeding well to the press. So I decided, well, I'll go back there and see if I can get a sandwich or something. So I was hungry. So I left my tape recorder on the table, and I went back. I was walking back there, and then chaos erupted. You could see Sirhan, who came out with his hand up and fired the shots. Then everybody was yelling and screaming. People were yelling, you know, get the gun, get the gun. We don't want another Oswald. Break his thumb if you have to. And it was just total chaos.
You were just inches from this, literally, right?
Well, I was a little further back than that, than inches.
Well, what would you say? 5 feet, 10 feet?
Several feet. Yeah.
And so the gunfire was almost like it was right into your ear.
Well, yeah, you could. I mean, clearly it was. You could hear the shot. It was a gunshot. A lot of people thought it was either balloons popping or firecrackers, but I mean,
Did you see the senator go down?
Yes.
And what happened at that point?
Well, at that point, people crowded around him and was trying to give him first aid and try to comfort him and his wife. But at that point, I turned around, realizing what had just happened. It took me a minute or two for it to set in, and ran back to our station so that I could get it on the air. Well, when it happened,
Dolores, you were in the ballroom. You were there with the farm workers, but you were also a friend with the senator, right? Tell me about that relationship.
Well, Senator Kennedy had come to Delano. He had been very supportive of our organization, and he actually was part of a commission, a senatorial commission, that had come to investigate what was going on in Delano. And we have this wonderful footage of Senator Kennedy right in the middle of our strike. You know, they had this commission. And, there's footage of this occasion when we're in this auditorium and these senators are having a hearing. And he asks the asked the sheriff and the district attorney why they were arresting the farm workers. And the sheriff said, well, we have to arrest them. The district attorney said, well, we have to arrest them because they might hurt somebody. And then Senator Kennedy says, do you mean to tell me that you're arresting people before they do anything wrong? And he said, well, yeah, because they're about to do something wrong. And the senator says, and I'm paraphrasing, the senator says, well, he says, during the lunch hour, I recommend that the sheriff and the district attorney read the Constitution of the United States of America. And, of course, everybody in the auditorium was full of strikers. So he had been a good friend of the Farm Workers Union. He had come down to Delano. He had raised money. We had a little volunteer clinic because there weren't any doctors during the strike that really took care of the farm workers. So we had a volunteer clinic where doctors would come in and take care of patients. And the senator had some fundraisers so we could build a clinic.
Now,
so
Cesar Chavez was your brother-in-law.
He's my brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm. And so the two of you worked together to make this organization what it became.
Yeah, I co-founded the union with Cesar.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a remarkable union, still is a remarkable organization, and you are still remarkable in the sense that you're still out there doing stuff. And I know you're only 39.
88.
Oh, so you volunteered it. I didn't have to ask.
No, yeah, I don't mind.
Well, 88, good for you. That's terrific. And you know, you're still out there doing your thing. I mean, you still are out there with all the energy that you always seem to have had. What's your secret?
I think you just have to stay active. And part of the activity that I've been engaged in is with Carrie Kennedy, Senator Kennedy's daughter. She heads up the Robert F. Kennedy Foundation, and she has been working in New York State trying to get some of the benefits for farm workers that we won over 40 years ago. And, Senator Kennedy was very instrumental in helping us to win our great boycott and the support that he gave us. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to get that for other farm workers throughout the country.
What did you think of him? I mean, he was kind of a quiet, reserved sort of guy, wasn't he?
Well, he was actually very funny. I mean, he had a great sense of humor. And, so he would always make everybody laugh, no matter how serious the situation was. A very, very sincere a person. What I like to say about the Kennedys, and the same thing with Ted Kennedy and about the Kennedy family, Ethel and the kids, they always bring you in through the front door, never through the back door. And even though they come from wealth, they relate to poor people, they relate to working people.
There aren't many people that can say that, that they've known more than one Kennedy or even one Kennedy. And one of the things I think is interesting is that the son of Senator Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He was 14 at the time. He's now 64. And he wrote a book called American Values, Lessons I Learned from My Family. And he talks about a lot of things that kind of came down from Grandma and Grandpa, Joseph Kennedy and Rose Kennedy. One of the things that he says in this book and said in our conversation when I was talking to him, was that the Kennedy thinking was that their wealth came from God, but it was their responsibility to use it to help in the public service. And that's exactly what you experienced, wasn't it?
Exactly. And, Ted Kennedy also, he was a really great friend also. He actually Ted Kennedy marched all the way from from Coachella, California, all the way to the Mexican border with all of us, bringing attention again to the way that the farm workers were being mistreated, and was a great champion also of the boycott. So I think that's a great legacy, because I think a lot of people in our country, they think of, well, how much wealth can I acquire? How rich can I get? Following the legacy of the Kennedy family and Cesar Chavez, what you have to leave is a legacy of justice, a legacy of making the world a better place. And I think that's why when you say the name Kennedy and it strikes a chord. I know with the Latino community, you go into people's homes and they'll have a little tapestry. And on the tapestry is Dr. Martin Luther King, John Kennedy, and Robert Kennedy. Because, you knew that these were people who were champions of the poor and the working people. And unfortunately, we don't see that often in politics today. And a lot of people go into politics it's a kind of a stepping step for themselves, for prestige or for power or for pensions or who knows what. But the thing is that we need more people to go into politics just for service to the public.
You wanted Robert Kennedy to be President Kennedy, and so did you, Tim.
I did. I was a young kid. I was 20 years old and just starting out in journalism. But I'd still been exposed to the politics of 1968 and seeing these people. And I thought Bobby Kennedy was honest. I thought he meant what he said. I was of the generation of Vietnam. You know, I was that age where I could have been drafted and sent to Vietnam, and I lost a lot of friends in Vietnam. And I think that Bobby Kennedy would have ended that war a lot sooner and ended it on a lot better note.
Well, that was his whole platform, really, that he wanted to end that Vietnam War.
Yes.
And that was, and he said in that speech at the hotel the night that he was killed, he said at the ambassador at the podium that that was going to be his platform, that, you know, Lyndon Johnson had just said he wasn't going to run again, and he was starting to creep up in the polls anyway. He was like 66 to 61% or, well, that doesn't add up, does it? But he was about 41 to 40-something. He was about 4 or 5 percentage points apart from Johnson before Johnson said that he was going to bow out of the race. But that night that he was killed, he said that he was going to carry that idea of ending the Vietnam War as his platform.
And I think that he would have done that. I think, if anything, Bobby Kennedy was honest. He was one of the few honest politicians. You know, over the years, you and I have covered a lot of politics.
Yeah.
And interviewed a lot of politicians. Yeah. And I look back at him as probably what I would think would be the mold for a good politician today. And unfortunately, we don't have that today. Unfortunately, we don't have another Bobby Kennedy that could light up the political sphere and bring honesty back to Washington.
I always thought of Bobby Kennedy as sort of the accidental politician. He ran his brother's campaign in '60. He got into the administration as attorney general, which he didn't really want to do. His dad wanted him to do it. And then when John died, he was incredibly depressed. Ethel Kennedy, his wife, said it was like a man with no arms. And he was like a ghost. And he started getting involved in sports. He started doing things like whitewater rafting and canoeing and things with the family and started to come back. And it was Ethel, his wife, who pushed him to get back into the public arena. And or else he might not have done it. You know, she really pushed him to go there. And she's still with us. She's, you know, 90 years old. And Robert Jr. says she's doing well. And, you know, but you know what? For a family that's had so much tragedy, it's almost difficult to comprehend how that happens. You know, it's just one terrible thing after another. It was, you know, it was Robert's older brother, Joseph, who died in a plane crash. And then President Kennedy's son, John, he died in a plane crash. I mean, it was just a lot of tragedy. And of course, the assassinations of John and Robert.
Well, you know, a lot of people looked at the Kennedys, I think, and thought that, well, this family must be cursed because of all these people, all their family members that died. And they certainly went through a lot of turmoil. But, you know, they handled it with such grace and dignity that I think today that's lacking. But, I mean, when you look at Jackie and how she's handled the problems that she's gone through and the stress she's gone through, it's with such dignity and
it was almost like she took a breath and didn't let go until the funeral and everything else were over.
Yeah, I was on the funeral train that came from New York when Robert's funeral, and it was really interesting because people, of course, many people had their careers were shattered. People that were looking forward to serving in the Robert Kennedy administration, people were mourning. And Ethel and the sisters were going around comforting people, they were not being comforted by others. They were going around. I thought, wow, who does that? What kind of a family is it? They were all wearing white and going around comforting people, going around hugging them and talking to them. And I just think what you said about the grace of the family, you know, this is who they are. And I think when you think of all of the tragedies that they have suffered, but I think it is maybe the Catholicism that holds them together. I know Robert Kennedy used to pray the rosary with his family every single day. He would come home from the hill and go down to their house and pray the rosary every single day. So their faith is just incredible faith in that, you know, they didn't all fall apart.
One of the things in this Kennedy book that Bobby Jr. wrote, it starts off with the first couple of chapters, first one being Grandpa and the second one being Grandma. And you really get a sense of the impact of these two people on the kids and then on the grandkids. And they had very clear feelings of how they were supposed to carry themselves and how they were supposed to be. And I thought that was very enlightening, actually.
Well, you know, in those days, it was a different time. It was a different generation where families were families. You know, they ate together at dinner. You know, the kids were respectful of their elders. Now it's a totally different time where that doesn't happen, which is sad. I mean, I just, you know, I mourn for the loss of those kinds of times. And, you know, I really wish that there were more Bobby Kennedys on the horizon that could try to straighten out this mess that we're in.
Now, a lot of people didn't like Bobby Kennedy. There were a lot of people that didn't like him. Even his own party had issues with him. And you know about that. And mm-hmm. Talk about that for a moment.
Oh, well, I think people criticized him because they felt that he came into the anti-war movement late because McCarthy had been there before him.
Eugene McCarthy,
and many people resented the fact that he had decided to run because they felt they were still supporting Eugene McCarthy, and I think people resented the fact that he was as assertive as he was because he was very assertive. A lot of the people in the labor movement didn't like him because he had been, you know, when he was in the Justice Department when they prosecuted Jimmy Hoffa from the Teamsters Union, there was some resentment in those circles also. But one thing I do want to say, though, in response to what you were saying about there aren't any more Bobby Kennedys, I do believe that there are. And some of them are Bobby Kennedy's children because, you know, he has one of his sons is in the Congress. So his grandson's in the Congress. And then, of course, his son, Joe, is also in the Congress of the United States of America. So I do believe that that spirit is still alive.
You've interacted with them?
Oh, yes, I have, actually.
So is your sense that they have that Kennedy thing?
Absolutely. I was campaigning with Chris Kennedy, his other son. He was running for the governor of Illinois. And when you're talking about family, again, this reminded me, because Chris made this beautiful speech talking about his family. And he talked about all of the different facets of his family, about his aunt who was schizophrenic, you know. And he talked about the people in his family that had died, and some of them had been addicted, and he talked about his family, the Kennedy family, but then he said this is all of our United States of America, because you know all of us, in spite of all of the different issues that different people have, we are still one human family. And I thought that was such a beautiful speech and something that I think that we have to remember.
How do you think the world would be today if Kennedy had become president?
Oh, it would be a different world.
You think?
And, you know, I like to quote Gloria Steinem, who said when Robert Kennedy was assassinated, she said, "This is the death of the future, not the death of the past, the death of the future." And I think definitely, I don't think we would have been in the wars that we're still involved in today. The issues of racism, I think, would be far behind us because he was a person that came down to Bedford-Stuyvesant with African-American folks to help them with low-income housing. He was in Appalachia there with the coal miners in Appalachia. He was with the farm workers. He was in Latin America. People in Latin America loved him. He didn't target Latinos as being rapists and criminals. We have been targeted recently. So he was a man who really brought people together.
You know, I just want to say this, and Tim, you can pipe in. If you put some perspective on this, back when John Kennedy was president, we were going through a very dicey situation with racial issues in this country. We had black-only, or as they called it, colored-only bathrooms and water fountains. And I lived in the South. I grew up in Texas, so Southwest. But I saw that. I remember taking a trip with my parents across the South and going to Mississippi, Biloxi, places like that, and seeing that sort of thing. And so what happened when Kennedy became president was a change in thinking. When Johnson ended up becoming president, his Great Society was all about trying to give some kind of parity to people, to give some kind of equality. And of course, I think that probably John Kennedy's assassination probably sped that up, because there was a sense of mourning. There was a sense of wanting to carry his agenda forward during the Johnson administration. When Robert was killed and Martin Luther King were killed, all of this kind of came together, I think, in a way to sort of push that forward. Would you agree with that?
I think at the same time, we have to remember all of the work that was being done by all the civil rights groups that was happening to make all of this happen. And that's the one thing that we always have to remember, that the movements and all of the work that was being done by the civil rights organizations all over the country, and people that were getting beaten up in the South and, you know, getting fire hoses turned on them, all the young students there. But all of that needed to turn into legislation and needed to be turned into laws. And that's, of course, what was able to happen, Lyndon Johnson was the one that was able to finally create some of those laws, of the civil rights laws that we have, giving people the right to vote, et cetera.
You can have an awful lot of activity in the way of activism, but you got to have somebody who's willing to sign on the dotted line.
Exactly.
And that's what Kennedy and Johnson did.
Good. Exactly.
And Tim?
Well, what Dolores said a few minutes ago, I think is true, too, is I've seen Congressman Kennedy, and I see a lot of Bobby in him. I see a lot of John Kennedy in him, and I think he is, if anybody, as close to that Kennedy mold. You were talking about people, you know, hated Kennedy. I remember years ago I did an interview with Mickey Cohen, who's a noted mobster here in Los Angeles. And Mickey told me, he said, I can't tell you how much I hate Bobby Kennedy. You know, he's just a terrible person. And so that brought to mind, of course, Bobby was the biggest enemy of organized crime.
Right, exactly. And that makes all the sense in the world, because that was his thing. He was clamping down on organized crime, which is why later down the road, there was this sort of sense that maybe organized crime was involved in the president's death. That connection, I don't think, ever was really solidified.
And actually, when Robert Kennedy decided that he was going to run for the presidency, some of his friends told him, you know, if you run, they're going to kill you. And he said, I know.
Jackie Kennedy Onassis told him the same thing.
But so we have to always remember that, what kind of courage does it take for someone to do that? Knowing what happened to his brother, knowing that he probably already had death threats even before he decided to run, and still went ahead and ran anyway.
So do you think that's because of the family, because of what grandma and grandpa did to instill certain things in their children and grandchildren that made them feel that they were dedicated to this country? You know, you got to remember, when they came here from Ireland, Irish Catholics were, there was a lot of bigotry. Mm-hmm. And they were believers that we're Americans, and maybe some of that is what kept the Kennedy sort of thinking in line.
Yeah, and I just think this whole idea of service that is so prevalent among the family, and some of his final words that he made just before he stepped off the podium, he said before he was assassinated, his last public words were, besides off to Chicago, which, you know, he said that, but he also said, we have obligations and responsibilities to our fellow citizens. And when we think of what fellow citizens are we talking about? We're talking about the disabled. We're talking about the homeless. We're talking about immigrants. We're talking about people who are incarcerated. And all of these people that are in our society right now are suffering. You know, and I think when we think it's 50 years, it was 1968, it's 2018. What a time for reflection. And so we can see, where were we in 1968? Where are we in 2018? You know, and so talking about the Kennedys, talking about Robert Kennedy, talking about the values of that family and what they stood for and stand for today. And then I think every American citizen can say, where do I stand?
I think also that if Kennedy had gone on to the convention in Chicago, you would not have seen the violence at the convention in Chicago. I think he would have put an end to that real quick.
Yeah, I mean, there's all that what if. And
I was a Kennedy delegate at the convention also, by the way.
Oh, were you?
Yes, uh-huh.
So you saw that firsthand.
I sure did. And
what was that like?
It was terrible because to see all those young people that were getting beaten up by the police and all of the California delegation, by the way, we had Secret Service people that were actually following us around. I had one guy that was just with me all the time. I said, and so I finally said to him, are you Secret Service? He said, yes. I mean, you know, so I mean, like, it's like all of us in the California delegation were suspect in some way or the other. And even we had an office with the Farmers Union right there. We had our office was right down on the street there where all of this action was taking place. Police actually came into our office trying to find some of the young people, you know, that were protesting. They just marched right in there with their billy clubs. And, you know, they didn't find anything. But it was pretty awful.
I mentioned Robert Kennedy Jr.'s book. Mm-hmm. And so I talked to Robert Kennedy Jr., and asked him to share some reflections. And I'd like to, let's listen to that for a moment.
Well, I was in boarding school outside of Washington, D.C. I was at a Jesuit boarding school. And a priest woke me up at 6 in the morning and said, there's a car waiting for you. And I didn't know why. I went home, and when I got home, somebody told me that my dad had been shot. But at that point, I thought he was still going to live because he felt indestructible to me. And then I heard my mother's, one of her sort of deputies saying that giving the order to close all the campaign headquarters. And that's when I thought, you know, my dad's not going to make it. And then I flew out on with two of my siblings, some other friends out to Los Angeles on President Humphrey's plane, on US 2, Vice President Humphrey's plane, and spent the night with my father.
This is a Good Samaritan hospital.
Yeah. And, you know, we went up to Good Samaritan. I was with my brothers and sisters, and we each took turns holding my dad's hand. He was on a respirator at the time. And I think around 2 o'clock in the morning, they took him off the respirator and he died. I think one of the most poignant memories that I have was actually after my dad died, when we brought him on that train ride. It should have been a 2.5 or 3 hour train ride, but it was 7 hours because there was 2 million people on the tracks. And they were the same cross-section of the American public that I had seen since I was a little boy in all the campaigns. There were black people and white people, and there were hippies with tie-dyed on, and there were people in military uniforms saluting. There were a lot of people saluting.
How do you want us to remember your dad on this 50th anniversary?
I think the best memorial to my father is what I see almost every day in my life, which is people coming up to me and saying, I went into public service because your dad, I ran for mayor, I became a nurse. I think it's in the lives of people that he inspired. They were idealists because they believed in the promise of this country, but they were also extreme pragmatists. I mean, you have to remember, my father won a presidential election in 1960. He was the campaign manager. He knew how to beat Humphrey. He'd already done it. He knew how to beat Nixon. He'd already done it. They had done the impossible. They knew how to make things work. They were changing the government in ways that were, extremely disruptive. They changed the nature of our foreign policy by creating the Peace Corps and the Alliance for Progress and the AID program and all of these other programs that said, we're going to show that the face of America abroad should be kind and generous, and it shouldn't be the face of a soldier. It should be the face of a Peace Corps volunteer. People wanted American leadership. Everybody in the world believed in the idealism of this country. It wasn't just us. Everybody believed in it, and they were hungry for our leadership, but they knew the difference between leadership and bullying.
You know, he carries on the Kennedy mission as well.
I think we all should. I hope that people, when they hear about Bobby Kennedy, and hopefully a lot of people that don't know, the younger people, that they Google Robert, they see what he stood for, and that his call can be a call to action for all of us, that we've all got to be involved. We've all got to be the type of patriots to our country that the Kennedys are, and start becoming active and fight for the greater good for our country, fight for the people that need our help.
I hope that the young people today, when they Google Bobby Kennedy's name, set up the kind of admiration many of us had for him and aspire to be like him and run for political office and get involved in government and not let what's going on now discourage them from being in government, not just saying, you know, it's all a swamp, but to make a difference and run for office, run for councilman, run for state senator, get involved and become involved. And I think that that's probably the hope for our future.
You know what says 50 years better than anything, and you just said it? Google. There was no Google in 1968.
There was not. It was the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Yes, it was. All, 30 volumes of it, you know? So it's a different world.
It is.
But we still remember people like this, even in an entirely different world. And I want to ask you one more thing, Dolores, and maybe just a little bit of perspective. You have been around for a while doing what you do, and you've made a name for yourself, but you've made change. You've effected change. You've done things that have changed rules and laws and how things are done. As you look back over these last 50 years, what do you think are some of your greatest achievements?
Well, there's I always like to measure them by how many people were affected. And I think one of them was the Amnesty Bill of 1986, where we were able to get over 3 million farm workers, got their legalization. And these are farm workers that were previously undocumented in the United States, and but because they had worked in agriculture for 3 years, they were able to get legalized. And then with people from the cities, also laws we were able to change to get ballots in the Spanish language so people could vote in Spanish, which we still have today. Another great law that we passed that I lobbied through the legislature was to that people who were legal residents of the United States, if they had their green cards, would be eligible for public assistance, especially our elderly people who couldn't get any kind of old age assistance because they were not yet citizens of the United States. And all of their kids had gone off to war, been in World War II, many of them decorated, but they were not eligible. And I think, so much of grassroots organizing that we've able to do over the years, and so many leaders that have come out of our, even with my current work with the Dolores Huerta Foundation, we're still doing grassroots organizing. And so we have farm workers and hotel workers that are sitting on school boards and city councils and recreation boards and utility boards, taking the power.
This is the ever-ready bunny right here. How many kids?
11.
How many grandkids?
17.
How many great-grandkids?
8.
On that note, what can you say?
Nothing.
Yeah, that's phenomenal.
Si se puede, that means yes we can.
And what the hell?
What the hell?
I want to thank Dolores Huerta and Tim Harrell, Bobby Kennedy Jr. as well, for spending this time and talking with me about this incredible moment in history, 1968, June, the assassination of Senator Robert Kennedy. If you haven't, this is a good time to subscribe to this podcast. Remember, it's called What the Hell?